Welcome to Pod Save America. I'm John Favreau.
I'm John Lovett.
I'm Tommy Vitor.
On today's show, our final pre-election pod, we'll talk about how both parties closed with dueling rallies in Pennsylvania featuring Joe Biden, Barack Obama, and Donald Trump. What we'll be watching for on election night and what it felt like on the ground in Nevada this weekend. You'll also hear from some of the organizers and candidates we talked to in Las Vegas. And later, we'll play a little game about Elon Musk's Twitter. It should be fun. But first, if you are listening to this before the polls have closed, you can still make a difference in this election. We are heading down to Irvine after we finish recording to help get out the vote for Katie Porter. If you go to votesaveamerica.com/volunteer, we'll have all kinds of ways for you to channel your anxiety into actual useful action right up until the polls closed. So do it right now. It matters. Could come right down to the wire in a whole bunch of different races. All right, let's get to the news. Three presidents, two parties, one perennial battleground state of Pennsylvania. It's where all the action was on the final weekend of the 2022 midterms. In Philadelphia, Presidents Biden and Obama spoke at a rally for Josh Shapiro, who was a healthy lead over Doug Mastriano in the governor's race, and John Fetterman, who was somehow basically tied with Dr. Oz. Ugh. Here's some of what they said at the event.
Oz and Pennsylvania? Look, I lived in Pennsylvania longer than Oz has lived in Pennsylvania. And I moved away when I was 10 years old.
This guy loves to talk a good game about freedom, right? Let me tell you something. It's not freedom to tell women what they're allowed to do with their bodies. That's not freedom. It's not freedom to tell our children what books they're allowed to read. It's not freedom when he gets to decide who you're allowed to marry. I say love is love. It's about fundamental values that my grandparents from Kansas taught me. Values I grew up with, values you grew up with, values we try to teach our kids, values we learn in churches and mosques and synagogues and temples. Honesty, fairness, opportunity, hard work, values that Josh Shapiro and John Fetterman stand for, values that Joe Biden stands for.
What'd you guys think of the Democrats' final rally in Philly? That the Josh Shapiro speech got quite a bit of traction.
Yeah, it seems like that's one message box subscriber that we can count at least.
That was a very Pfeiffer riff.
Yeah, it was great to, you know, like, I think because Doug Mastriano is such a terrible candidate, I think like Josh Shapiro has had a little bit of space and hasn't been sort of covered for how kind of disciplined and excellent a campaign he's been running. But I'm glad to see, because he's been doing a riff like that for quite some time. And it was nice to see it get a little national attention, because I think it wasn't just that it was on message and covering a lot of issues that we all think is important. It was sort of, to me, like, oh, like when we talk in the abstract about Democrats trying to take the mantle of freedom and using that as a big part of our argument, it's easy to imagine it. It's nice to see it in actual practice. And it was like, oh, that is like a really powerful argument, a broad, big argument for a kind of freedom politics that I think is very exciting for us to use going forward, regardless of what happens.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good candidate, and it was great to see him. I mean, I also think there's some truth to the fact that you can use the same lines on a bigger stage, and it just sounds bigger and better when you have, like, 7,000 people or whatever it was cheering for you. I also thought Biden sounded great at this event. The line about Dr. Oz not living in Pennsylvania any longer than Biden did, and Biden moved when he was 10, was, like, funny and effective and a good hit. Obama was great. So, yeah, it was exciting to see, like, a big event with a lot of energy at the end of the campaign.
It's one of Biden's best lines in the campaign.
Yeah, it really was good.
It was great. On the Josh Shapiro thing, yeah, we have talked a lot about John Fetterman because he's been such an exciting candidate. Josh Shapiro has been running a fantastic race. You're right, he's had an opponent who is extreme, has not like spent any money on television ads, has been sort of one of the few Republicans that's been kind of sort of abandoned by the National Party.
Because he said he was going to do 40 days of prayer.
Yeah, I mean, he's like Confederate cosplay and everything. Yeah. He's not a great candidate. But I would say, like, you heard that riff from Shapiro in the clip we just played. There was another one where he also said, like, if you don't look like Doug Mastriano, if you don't vote like him, if you don't read the books he reads, he doesn't respect you. You're not for him. And I just think it was a great, we talk a lot about how to make democracy real and tangible for people, and how political identity has become so powerful as an indicator in this country of what you do. And that was a way to sort of use identity, but also do it broadly, right?
Yeah.
And so there is a wide swath of people that Josh Shapiro is trying to appeal to there by saying, like, look, I'm the one, the Democrats are the one who are tolerant of every kind of person here. And Doug Mastriano is the one who just wants people exactly like him.
And it's funny, because I talked to Josh Shapiro a couple weeks ago when we were in, I guess that was the Philly show, and he used all those lines in conversation. You know, he used all those riffs in conversation. And it's a good example of just a politician who's just been working it on the stump and kind of grinding it out and figuring out what works. Because I saw, you know, I saw him do those lines and I saw them really, really work on like just sort of Philadelphia, our kind of progressive audience. But clearly, like, I think he has been kind of very, you know, smartly kind of really honing this message quietly for the last 6 months. And he's just so disciplined. Even when you talk to him, you just see that he is just a incredibly disciplined politician. We talked to him on Pod Save America. Couldn't get him off message. And we're like, oh man, that guy, we couldn't get him off message. That was as hard as we pushed.
Reminds me of what in 04 when I would be in the office and Obama would walk up to me and be like, we worship an awesome God in the blue states. And I'd be like, right, but room for cream.
Yeah.
Or you'd take it.
And he was like, sugar. Hey, out of many, one.
Right. Yeah. I'd be like, just, again.
Tommy, I could no sooner disown my grandmother.
To Obama's point that he made to us on the Pod Save America interview, which got a lot of traction when he talked about the Democratic Party sometimes being a buzzkill. The antithesis of that was Josh Shapiro's message that we are the party that is like
I'm drunk
open to everyone, that is open to everyone, and Doug Mastriano's party is the buzzkill because they only want you to think exactly like they do. Like that was such a good example of that. On the other side of the state, just outside Pittsburgh, Donald Trump spoke at a rally for Mastriano in Oz, where he, of course, focused almost entirely on his own ambitions and petty grievances. Here's a clip.
They must think I'm going to announce for president tonight. That's a lot. That's a lot of people. I promise you, in the very next very, very, very short period of time, you're going to be so happy, okay? Trump at 71, Ron DeSanctimonious at 10%, Mike Pence at 7. Oh, Mike's doing better than I thought.
Mike's doing better than I thought is so funny.
First of all, I saw so much coverage of like just sort of giddy, sort of rock hard journalists saying he called him the sanctimonious. And I thought it was like when I went to watch the clip, I was like, oh, it's going to be in a riff. But no, he just sort of tested it out.
Yeah.
He threw it in. He looked away from the camera while he did it. He didn't want a clip of it. He was just trying. He was just sprinkling it in.
It's the difference between like, so many politicians who they got a good line from their speechwriter or someone and then they deliver it and then look like I didn't like it. Like he just sort of Oz has been trying to fool people into thinking he's a moderate. Why do you think he decided to show up with Donald Trump the weekend before the election?
I don't think he had a choice. I think Donald Trump wants credit for any and all victories, and he's starting to smell blood in the water, so he's going to show up wherever he wants to show up to claim credit, is my guess.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, also Dr. Oz is not smart. He told people at that same rally, tomorrow morning I want you to contact 10 people, do it before the Steelers game. Steelers have a bye this week.
That was amazing.
That's outrageous. Disgusting.
Everybody fucking
I heard
knows
about that.
That
from more people than I did about
everybody
Ron
knows
DeSanctimonious.
The Steelers have a bye game.
The Steelers suck, but they had a bye week.
They have a bye week.
So they couldn't lose.
I think someone would let him know that.
You'd think.
He also went to he had the crudité thing.
You know? Yeah.
It's also part of the sort of dynamic that we've seen for the last couple of weeks, which is Republicans are viewing kind of base events that turn out their base as worth it, even if they're in some ways alienating to some of the independents. Like you have these big rallies for J.D. Vance. You have Trump out there, but then Tim Ryan doesn't want the Democrats out there. You have they're playing for different people. And I think what we've all said, you know, if Republicans have this massive turnout machine in the midterms, and if we can match it, we can match it. But they're relying on trying to get that whole base out.
Yeah, they're relying on a base only strategy.
Yeah, and especially Dr. Oz, because Dr. Oz took him some time to consolidate the Republican base, longer than a lot of the other Republican candidates, so he probably felt like he needed this in the end. And their bet is probably that, like, if he ends up winning independents, it's going to be larger forces that help him win the independents, like people just being pissed about the economy, and so whether Trump is there or not is not going to make a huge difference to him. NBC reported that Trump Very seriously considered announcing for president at that rally, but advisors convinced him not to, though, as you heard, he did say he will very, very probably do it. And also, we're recording this Monday morning. I just saw Jonathan Swan from Axios report that a bunch of Republicans think that Trump possibly could announce that he's running today or tonight at the J.D. Vance rally in Ohio.
I think the guy, like, he's a TV guy. He's a TV producer. He just likes to tease and tease and tease. But at this point, it's like, you know, when you're watching a show that was written for network or for some sort of like a show with commercials, and you're watching it on Netflix, and it'll repeat the last like minute of whatever you just watched after the where the commercial break was supposed to be. That's what I feel like with Trump every time.
Yeah.
Repeating, teasing. It's not going to happen.
He's going to do it.
Yeah, at some point, he's going to do it. I just think that there's like...
We've been wondering. It lost in the like last couple of weeks of the midterms is like Donald Trump's going to run for president.
Yeah, like the paperwork he's sending into the FEC is going to like pass the Justice Department paperwork in the mail. But they're like, he's in a race against time. Yeah, look, I do think that like... If he's not, I'd be very surprised. You know, prove me wrong. This whole episode's going to turn into a fucking brown banana in 7 seconds anyway.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, it is.
But like, if you're going to announce, you don't announce Monday night. You announce on Tuesday night when the whole country's watching. He's seen good returns come in. He goes to the mic and he does it. But he clearly wants to do it fast because if he's going to get indicted, he wants to be indicted for political purposes.
Yeah, or he can do it after he gets indicted. Either he's
yeah.
Either way, there's a case for him.
Yeah,
there's a lot
sure.
of people like we got to indict him first. I'm like, guys,
no. I'm not saying.
No,
that
I know.
They
no,
have
I'm just saying
him first.
So everyone else knows because we have been getting some questions about that. It's like, no, if he gets indicted, he's still going to run for president. I don't. It's not going to slow him down at all.
Yeah. Well, oh, he's going to be chastened.
Speaking of chastened, do you think Ron DeSantis is chastened after that? I heard some. There are a lot of Republicans close to Ron DeSantis who are outraged that Trump did this.
Republicans love sanctimonious politicians. What are you talking about? Have you seen Mike Pence? They're all sanctimonious. That's not a criticism.
You know what? I know we've gone back and forth a few times, at least I have, on like, could DeSantis do it? Could DeSantis take Trump down? It doesn't seem like he's even going to run at this point.
Tom Cotton's out.
I love that
Tom Cotton's out.
I like that Tom Cotton thinks he decided to not become president as opposed to the entire country being like, you have a repellent personality.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we'll see. We'll see what we'll see what happens with the sanctimonious. It was good timing. I wonder if Trump saw that that video that the DeSantis campaign made saying that God created Ron DeSantis on the eighth day, which is one of the most sanctimonious things I've ever seen in my entire life. So it was a fitting nickname.
Two sets of footsteps. One of them, Ron DeSantis was carrying.
Yeah.
Oh, Ron was carrying.
On the eighth day, imagine your job is to pave roads and keep the schools funded, and you put out a fucking ad that says, on the eighth day, God created me. What, did you read the game? Is he negging the voters?
Yeah,
it's like peacocking.
Doing?
It's the most disgusting thing.
He's a weird guy.
Yeah, it is a nickname that does draw quite a distinction in, with the charisma that Donald Trump has versus the lack of charisma that Ron DeSantis has.
I still like Miss Florida.
I think you can be sanctimonious with a lot of charisma. Look at like every Bible thumping preacher on TV on Sunday, right? I mean, I don't know. We'll see. Awesome. We'll see if this sticks.
All right, we got one last set of polls and predictions from pollsters and forecasters over the weekend. The consensus is that Republicans are favored to win the House, though the forecast for the number of seats ranges from the low teens to the 40s. So everyone knows the average loss for a president's party in their first midterm is 27. Clinton lost 54, Obama lost 63, and Trump lost 40. But the generic ballot polling average right now also has Republicans ahead by just 1 point, so who knows? The Senate is a real toss-up, with margin of error races for Democratic incumbents in Arizona, Georgia, Nevada, and New Hampshire, as well as the open Senate seat in Pennsylvania. There are also tight governor's races in Arizona, Michigan, Wisconsin, Nevada, and even New Mexico and Oregon. We, of course, don't do predictions
nope,
here.
Nope, not a damn
Never,
one.
Not once.
So instead, I will ask you guys how you're feeling and what you're watching for on election night. What races are you going to be paying close attention to? What trends are you looking for? What are some of the big questions you want answered?
I mean, I'm emotionally prepared for some losses. Just going to throw that out there because that tends to happen in the first midterm of a president's first term. So I'm really watching closely Pennsylvania because I feel like there's a sort of choose your own adventure vibe to the polling coming out of Pennsylvania, the Senate race there in Georgia. We just got back from Nevada. We got to meet some really great candidates. I want all of them to win. Dina Titus, Susie Lee, We saw Jackie Rosen while we were eating some tater tots at a restaurant near the airport. So I don't know. Those are the races I'm watching. I'm also watching to see the hijinks that occur in the days after the election when we're still counting mail-in votes, and I'm getting increasingly anxious about that.
Yeah, I want to understand. I know we won't know this for a while, but I'm most interested in seeing in detail how abortion and choice played out and where it drove engagement and where it didn't. You know, we've been talking about this in a couple different places, that you start to see that, you know, we had hoped, I think, especially right after Dobbs, when there was this moment of enthusiasm, that it really might lead to kind of a wave of engagement and voting for people coming to kind of protect abortion rights. And my concern is, in places where, like California, where we can put Prop 1 through and protect abortion rights in the states, did it not have as big of an impact on other national races? In a lot of places, you see kind of signaling from Republican politicians to let their voters, to let voters know that they're not as big of a threat to abortion rights as national Republicans are. Like, will that have an impact? Are people voting this as a values thing, as a practical protection in where they live thing, or some combination? So that's like the, I want to understand how that plays out, because especially if Republicans take the House and or the Senate, we will have national Republicans pushing for a nationwide ban. I just want to understand how important and salient that's going to be for people. And then the other piece of it is, you know, you see these polls, they are have not been great. But like, I want to, I'm curious how Gen Z turns out in this midterm. Do they overperform? Do they underperform? Do they hit what we expected? That is the thing that I am most interested in.
Yeah. So you have all the forecasters and the polls and stuff like that. There's also like political scientists do these predictions, and they do it like a year in advance. And it's based on sort of the president's approval, historic trends, the economy. And for this midterm, with inflation like this, and it being President Biden's first term, they predict, like, you know, 40-something seats that Democrats would lose, right? And lose the Senate for sure. And so I am very interested. And I would say also that in the last couple elections, basically ever since 2016, 2018, 2020, I think sometimes at the end of the race, the narrative and the polls sort of mismatch the fundamentals. And so, like, in 18, we thought it was going to be a huge blue wave, and it ended up like the Republicans kept the Senate. In 20, it suddenly looked like Biden was like up by 8, 9, 10, and some of these states ended up being a super close race. So the standard of like where the baseline for this race is, Democrats lose up to 40 seats and probably the Senate. If we beat that, it's going to be interesting to see how much candidate quality really matters, because we have talked all through this election season that we have nominated some really fantastic Democratic candidates. I'm especially watching Fetterman in Pennsylvania, Warnock in Georgia. We all love Katie Porter here in California, right, in Southern California. And they have nominated some truly terrible candidates, especially in the Senate. And the question is, how much does candidate quality matter, or is this just going to depend on the national environment and for larger forces?
New Hampshire is a big example of that too. Huge, Don Baldick, yes, is a certified lunatic up at the Republican running up there.
And by the way, I mean, it's not just that Republicans have nominated terrible people in the Senate. They've nominated absolutely abysmal candidates in the House. And you even have Mitch McConnell, when he was asked, why is Kevin McCarthy seeming to be doing better in the polls than you are? And he said, well, because the candidate quality in the Senate matters. What he was saying is, oh, Kevin McCarthy's running a bunch of fucking morons, dopes, and goons, but nobody knows who's running for the House. They vote more like by the ticket.
Yeah. Blake Masters, another one. But guys, forget about the House, the Senate, the future of the democracy. The pollsters are the ones on the hot seat Tuesday night. You know what I mean? The Nates are on the hot seat. Harry Enten, we're watching you. G. Elliott guy, the economist.
G. Elliott.
Sleep with one eye open, pal.
I think that basically.
Trafalgar.
I think all the Nates, I think there's what, 10 Nates at this point, right? They've been, whatever number of Nates, basically.
It ebbs and flows by the day.
But I think that all Nates should be basically, you should have like a long board, and the edge of the board should be hanging over a pool, and you should be standing on the board, and they should have to take a step further and further out on the board as the night moves along, and whoever's model is better gets to walk back off, but otherwise you just jump off your side.
I'm sorry,
of the board.
Are you a pirate? Are they walking the plank?
It's a pool. I'm not trying to kill anybody.
Is the pool
so full? So it's just a refreshing dip.
Yeah, it's just a kind of dunk tank situation. I wasn't just more into it. It's all in good fun.
That sounds fun.
One serious note on the polls. If they are wrong again in the same way they were wrong in 2018 and 2020, like, come
no
on,
dessert
people.
For you.
And everyone's like, well, they were pretty right in 2020. Yeah, in 2018. yeah, they were pretty accurate in 2018, except in certain places where then they were very wrong again in 2020 and had been wrong in the same trip. It's non-response bias with non-college educated voters. If we have that problem again, it's time to fucking
we're so to do
back.
What? What do you want them to do, John?
Well, just admit that that's the problem, because every time after the election, a bunch of you'll hear from a bunch of Nates that are like, eh, well, it's just sometimes the directions, the polling errors in the other direction. It's like, it hasn't been in the other direction for a while.
People. Yeah.
I just don't know what I want to understand. Like, we'll see, but it's a sort of like, like, it just seems like each time they should be correcting for that, and the next time it shouldn't be as bad.
It's hard to correct for it. I'm also wondering, like, does the 2018 anti-Trump coalition show up, right, in a midterm? It was a record turnout in 2018, and people turned out in a midterm that usually just turn out in presidential elections on the Democratic side. Will those folks still show up? Will the Trump voters from 16 and 20, who often don't vote in midterms, show up and then make it another extremely high turnout election? Obviously, I'm going to be looking at how many election deniers win. Very interested, and this is one where it'll also take some time to figure out, like, how do Democrats do with working class voters, especially working class Latino voters and black men, who we've seen some losses with in recent elections. And then, do we have trouble in blue places like Oregon, New York, the mayor's race here in Los Angeles? Which I know is between two Democrats. But
yeah,
not
then
really.
We're in big trouble. I mean, the mayor's race here in Los Angeles speaks to the broader problem that we're all just inured to and don't talk about anymore, which is the utterly broken campaign finance process that we have that leads to a Georgia Senate race, I think, costing $250 million all in.
Yeah, $250 million for the
quarter of a billion dollars.
And
it's going to go to a runoff.
Very likely to go to a runoff.
Maybe, oh, God, it's going to go to a runoff. I'm just keep getting more emails. It's like, hi, John, it's Raphael. I'm holding a dachshund off the edge of a cliff. Will you donate $7.50 right now?
Guys, I got to admit something really embarrassing. I saw an email in my Gmail the other day from Adam Schiff, and it was like, hey, hope you're well.
Tommy got caught.
And the trick-or-treaters, you know, have been fun. And I was like, oh, cool. Adam Schiff emailed me fundraising.
And you know that's not Jennifer Lopez in your DMs, right?
Even though she did send an old picture of her.
Weird.
Usually when people text you, they send a picture of themselves, right, in the text.
And they don't ask for your password.
Right.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicolet Avenue, which is where Alex Preti was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life, and it is all happening right now.
Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a 5-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.
So let's do something useful for people listening. Like, when should people expect to know the results in some of these big races?
Go to bed, wake up, do a day of work, go to bed, and then wake up, and then we should know.
Okay, that's good. I have a list. Big states will know on election night. New Hampshire, Florida, Virginia. They'll count the votes pretty fast. We'll probably know everything.
In Virginia, there will be some swingy districts that will give us a signal about where everything's going.
Very important what Tommy just said. Dave Wasserman says these are the ones to watch in Virginia. So if Elaine Luria holds on in Virginia too, it should be a better night for Democrats than expected. If Abigail Spanberger loses in Virginia 7, it's likely that Republicans win over 20 seats. If Annie Kuster in New Hampshire or Jennifer Wexton in Virginia lose,
feeling my nerves,
Republicans are likely to win over 30 seats. This is all according to,
you know, it's funny,
Dave Wasserman, who has seen enough.
John could have slipped in a fake race there, and we would
have no idea.
No clue.
Those are the big ones we'll know on election night. Wednesday, Not until Wednesday, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin. It's likely that not until Election Day or even on Wednesday, some of those states can even start counting their mail-in ballots and absentee ballots because of...
Which...
Republicans passing laws to make it so
Pennsylvania
that...
Pennsylvania Republicans. Yeah.
And then even longer than Wednesday, Nevada, they're counting ballots up until November 15th. Arizona, which is basically a mostly mail-in state, and right here in California...
California,
for sure, California. The mayor's race, the congressional races here, it could be a couple weeks. So just so everyone knows.
There are going to be some hot takes about what's happening in California.
Some will come from us.
Some from us. Ignore
Listen,
them.
We'll try to keep them cooler.
If it's really close and we need to do kind of like a Brooks Brothers riot insurrection kind of thing, meet you at Blue Ribbon Sushi at the Grove.
Yeah, for sure.
What kind of insurrection?
We're just doing a sit-in.
Look, if it's looking like Caruso is winning, we're going to be like, we were always for Rick Caruso. Our wonderful mayor.
I'm not going to the Grove anymore.
Yeah, we're going to the Grove. We're going to the Grove. It's where we keep our Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah, it's a great Cheesecake Factory. Finally, we're
also,
about
there's
to...
one of the Americana. So, there's two of them.
All right, we're
also
about to
Caruso.
We're about to hear from some of the organizers, volunteers, and candidates we talked to in Nevada over the weekend. Before we do, we should talk a bit about how it felt on the ground out there. What'd you guys think?
It felt good out there. I mean, I don't know. We met a lot of really great volunteers. Democracy feels better on the ground when you're not on Twitter yelling at Nates. And we met a lot of really awesome volunteers who were, you know, in campaign offices at 9 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday, getting ready to knock doors and, you know, for Susie Lee and for Dina Titus and the Nevada Democratic Party.
Yeah, it's like we were talking to one activist. Like, she has a full-time job. She has two kids, and she's organizing to pass the Equal Rights Amendment in Nevada and doing endorsements and knocking on doors. And it's like, God, what a bunch of lazy oafs we are.
Yeah, we're
and
good
just
people.
Like, no cynicism everywhere. Everyone's so excited. It's just like, I know it sounds cheesy when we say like, oh, it makes you go feel better to go knock on doors. But, you know, we left that event Sunday morning with Susie Lee and all those volunteers. We're like, yeah, like obviously the bigger picture looks pretty bleak right now. But like these people are they're turning out. They're working hard. It was great. Yeah.
Love that got in a pitched battle with a Amherst sophomore.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
About which college is cooler, Williams or Amherst?
In the package. Stay tuned for that, for the battle.
It's a debate where everybody loses.
Kid got the last
one. We should also say, by the way.
He was great, by the way.
We've warned you against looking too much into the early vote, but we've kept saying that the exception is Nevada and John Ralston, who knows the data in that state better than almost anyone and has accurately predicted most of the big races over the last decade. So his final predictions last night were that Catherine Cortez Masto holds on, that Steve Sisolak, the Democratic governor, loses, and that Democrats hold two of the three House seats. He thinks that Susie Lee doesn't eke it out, which would piss me off because she was wonderful.
She was really good.
She was really it was
and then
she
he does think
speech.
That Dems win the Secretary of State and AG races, which is good because they're a bunch of crazy fucking election deniers. So we'll see. Ralston could be wrong.
From Ralston's lips to God's ears, as we always say.
That's what we always say here.
Follow John Ralston, the Nevada Independent. He's a great reporter. Mm.
All right. With that, let's hear more from some of the folks that we met in Las Vegas.
This is producer Olivia Martinez. We're here in campaign headquarters. We've got a big sign that says days until election day, 3. Another sign that says Trump Putin 24.
Shake it out. Shay. Hi, your name is Shay.
It is. My name is Shay.
So wait, why did you want to come here and knock on doors?
It's been on my to-do list to canvass, and I've been kicking myself to do it for the past 3 or 4 months. And I realized today is this weekend's the last opportunity. And I woke up at 8:55, and it's 9:31, and I'm here.
And just because it's an audio medium, I do want people to understand that Shay is wearing Saturday morning sunglasses indoors.
You're lucky I brushed my teeth. I wouldn't be doing this interview if I forgot to do that.
Hell yeah.
Really close.
What gets you up to kind of come here? What issues are like the most important to you personally?
Abortion access and a woman's right to choose is a huge issue. But every time I listen to the news and they talk about the democracy stuff, January 6th stuff, that affects everything. So that democracy is the number one issue.
My name is Margie Feldman, and I am the chapter lead of Nevada Jewish Dems. I'm here for so many reasons today, and it gives me a lot of energy to not be afraid, but actually go out there and talk to people. And then we find most people want the freedoms, even if they're not willing to say that or put that sign on their front lawn. What keeps me in the fight is I know what the world can be. I know what freedom feels like. I know what democracy feels like. And it's important that we don't give that up.
We're here at the Nevada Victory Democratic headquarters. There's a lot of really excited canvassers who are just so fired up. Can we get your name and what you do here?
Yeah, so my name is Hutch. I'm the deputy GOTV director here at Nevada Democratic Victory. That's my title, but I run the high school program.
Awesome. Can you tell us a little more about the high school program and how it came to be?
Yeah, so I mean, really, we just knew that going out into this community specifically was going to make or break this entire election, right? So it was really important to do that kind of early investment here and making sure that we had good messengers to do that investment. And these kids were basically, can't think of anybody better to do that, right? So 90% of our program is bilingual. Everybody is from this neighborhood specifically, and everybody, you know, a lot of time they might knock on the door where they know their aunt, they know their mom, something like that, that lives in that neighborhood. So we knew that that was going to be really important. And so we started investing in this program all the way back in July. You know, our first shift, we only had like 20 kids at it. And now we're doing like 40 every 3 hours. I mean, it's just, this election's way too important to sit out, right? I mean, Republicans, right, their solution to inflation, things like that, are to take your grandma's health insurance and make it harder for women to buy, get health care, really, right? So they're not a serious party that has serious solutions. We are, right? Like, we got to be the adults in this room. We got to fight against, you know, rising health care costs. We got to make sure we're bringing good jobs here in Nevada. And I know that these candidates are doing that, and these kids are just the best messenger we could ever possibly ask to do that.
Love it. Where are we at?
We are in Henderson, Nevada. We are now in a strip mall parking lot waiting for a rideshare to take us to a diner.
Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm John. What's your name?
Sander.
And you're here today to knock on some doors?
I'm here today to knock on some doors. I actually go to Amherst, so I thought you would not be pleased.
Some two-bit college in Massachusetts.
Yeah, so I came up for the election to knock on some doors to get some votes. I couldn't stay back in Massachusetts where we know what's going to happen, so I wanted to come out and help.
What year are you?
Sophomore.
Look at this. Look how young sophomores are now. look at how young they've become. This sucks. It goes to some dump in Massachusetts that only the worst people go to.
I could say the same about Williams.
This interview is over.
All right, so we're in the car. We are heading from... We're in the east side?
We're in the east side of Las Vegas.
We're heading on the east side of Las Vegas to the 2 p.m. event with Congresswoman Titus.
Love is fading fast. Those four espresso shots not holding you over?
Thank you.
Ooh, ooh. Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Nice
to meet you guys. How are you guys doing?
Everyone here understands the stakes in this election. Everyone here understands that choice is at stake, that protecting Medicare and Social Security is at stake, that having people that will actually fight to lower costs for people versus fighting for the richest and biggest corporations in this country is at stake. Everyone here understands what's at stake. You know, we host this show, Pod Save America. We started this media company because we were frustrated. We were frustrated because we felt like the big outlets don't really tell people the stakes. They treat it like a game. And on top of that, we have all this noise on social media that confuses and confounds and spreads misinformation. And then on top of that, we have Fox News and all of its satellites that are drowning us in misleading and deceptive information to try to scare people, divide people, drive people to focus on our worst instincts rather than our best. And we have tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of dark money dropping on top of us every single day. And so whose job is it to tell people what's really at stake? Because we know if they understood, if they really got what's on the ballot, that we would win. I see Moms Demand Action, that people would understand the stakes between gun safety and deregulation. So who is going to do that work? Well, it's going to be us in the home stretch of this election knocking on doors. The media won't do it. There's a lot of people trying to hurt, not help. But if we go door to door and have the most effective interactions that anyone can have, which is face-to-face interactions or person-to-person interactions, if we can do that in Nevada, if we can do that across the country, we will win. So thank you all for coming out to do that work, to close that gap, because everybody here gets it. Now it's our job to go make sure our friends and our family and our neighbors get it. So thank you so much.
My name is Vanita Starks, and I live here in Henderson, Nevada. And I would like to say this. If you don't want to find yourself behind the eight ball in January, and you don't want to see your Social Security benefits chopped, your health care chopped, your right to choose. Ladies, your right to choose chopped. If you don't want to see your taxes go up and the top 1% get that big giant cut again, let's not go backward. Let's move forward. You know, I'd like to see Nevada move forward. And so that's why I vote a blue ticket all the way down. And I'm going to continue to do that. And let's go Nevada.
My name is Mark, and I'm out today with EDF Action. It's the advocacy partner of the Environmental Defense Fund. And the thing about living in Vegas is I think we're living in the middle of a desert, and we're acutely aware that our water supply is finite. If we don't do some pretty drastic things to deal with that, this whole swath of the country may be uninhabitable in, you know, 20 years. And some of our elected leaders here in Las Vegas have made tremendous steps, and we've got to keep electing leaders who are going to keep pushing that and fighting that and spreading those changes.
Here with Congressman Dina Titus in the home stretch. How's it going out there? How's it feel? What are the vibes?
Well, it's been a tough election, and that's why we're working so hard to get all the voters out that we need. Some is mail-in, some is coming to the polls. That'll happen on Tuesday, of course. But I'm feeling more optimistic because we got so many people on the ground. We got a good game going. Everybody, unions are working. I think it's going to pull it through.
If you have one thing you'd want to say to people who are listening who are either who live in Nevada or have family and friends out there, what would you say to them? It's Monday night.
I'd say it's critical to turn out because the issues are so clear and the differences are so stark between what we stand for and what they stand for. If you want to move forward, come out and vote for us. If you want to slide back to the good old days that weren't that damn good for a lot of people, they're your candidates.
I got you a vote today. And let me tell you how. Okay. I hit my limit on the ATM. So I had to get a cash advance, and I was talking to the cashier at the casino, and she saw my hat, and she said, you think I should vote on Tuesday? I'm pretty busy on Tuesday. And she's like, I always vote for the Democrats. And I said, have you seen some of these people that Dina Titus is up against, that Catherine Cortez Masto is up against? She's like, yeah, they're pretty nuts, aren't they? I guess maybe I should make some time to vote. So I just want you to know that because I lost so much, so quickly, I got you a vote.
Yeah! To go to every casino on the strip.
And I'll do that everywhere. I'll go door to door.
So I went to the bathroom for 1 minute, and I come out, and my coworkers, my partners, my co-hosts, best friends are doing a pop-up press conference without me.
Yeah, sorry. The congresswoman showed up, and she's like, aren't there supposed to be three of you? Isn't one called Tommy?
Yeah. Tommy came back and then took pictures of us because he thinks it's funny when he sees us pretending to be like politicians, and we find it extremely embarrassing. But nonetheless, look, I think we did a great job, and we did it. We closed the deal. We closed the deal for Nevada, and that's the most important thing.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicolet Avenue, which is where Alex Preti was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life, and it is all happening right now. Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course they use a five-year-old child as bait. And of course they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.
All right, before we go, we're going to play a little game, and we have with us our fearless producer, Hallie Kiefer, who's going to run it.
Oh, hi. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming back.
Of course. Well, yeah, I was like, I refuse, but you begged me to have me back on, and I agreed.
This is true.
But on the lighter side of things, I guess hypothetically, by which I mean the light of the burning pyre that is Twitter, Elon Musk has officially paused the rollout of his new Twitter Blue, which of course famously is going to be $7.99 for a monthly subscription to get a check. It was initially scheduled to start today. They kind of soft launched it over the weekend. It didn't really go well. But fortunately, the new abomination will reportedly go live November 9th, providing Twitter successful at allegedly trying to hire back a lot of the people they fired. Apparently, mm-hmm. they're doing that. So things are going great over there. And I just wanted to add before we play the game, did you see his tweet to like who he thinks you should vote for and why?
Yeah.
And I just want to read it for the in case a viewer, if you're not on Twitter. He tweeted, shared power curbs the worst excesses of both party. Therefore, I recommend voting for Republican Congress, given that the presidency is Democratic. That might be the craziest things he's ever said.
Oh, I don't know at this point.
He's just
he's a real asshole.
He's just a low information voter who thinks he's a high information voter.
Yeah.
And I do think Lovett should be put on trial at The Hague forever on Loli ever saying that he's a genius, which has come up, and I think you should be put to task.
I'm sorry. The car drives itself.
I reject the liberal dogma that says that you must hate everyone absolutely if you disagree with them politically. The guy did start a rocket company.
Well, I think he's smart.
And so I love him.
I think just because
you don't have to love him, he's good at a rocket company.
He's good at building rockets and electric cars, and he's bad at politics and communication.
You can be a genius asshole.
Yes, and that's what we're talking about.
I don't like him. I don't think he's stupid.
You love him.
You love him.
Love him.
I love him.
Your car. You drive your car. Own that.
I do.
Thank you.
Love it already paid for Twitter Blue. Actually, that's a good segue, right?
Wait, is that true? Did you?
No.
Okay. Obviously, Love It has vowed on this very podcast not to pay.
That's right.
Because he doesn't want to be doused in a creamy New England clam chowder or a delicious etouffee by a morally upright stranger, as if he was a Van Gogh. But I do think I could talk one of you into Shelley Got Your Heart in Cash if you were actually getting something of value. So I'm just going to give you a couple scenarios.
Okay.
This was crowdsourced from everyone here at Crooked. So I would say these fall into political, realistic features, and then a category I would describe as simply horny. So I'm going to try to pick from each, and you guys can react. The first one, will you tell me which way you think it lands? So Twitter Blue is, okay, it is $7.99 a month, but if you get it, you do get Matt Iglesias' tweets a whole hour earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, a Matt Iglesias tweet window.
No, I don't think that's worth.
I mean, yeah. I mean,
$8 bucks a month.
I read his Substack all the time, so why do I need the tweets?
I'm leaving.
Oh wow. Oh, we got a slow boring head over here.
Okay, great. I think you guys made the right choices. Oh, so here's another one. You'll tell me if this is enough. Twitter Blue. Oh, yes, it is $7.99 a month, but you get a feature that turns off all discourse, so you can just enjoy the jokes.
Oh, absolutely.
That's great.
I'd pay $100 a month.
Oh, if there was a switch, if there was like a politics on, politics off, like sports on, sports off jokes, I would pay for that in a heartbeat.
But it's got to be the good jokes, though.
And it's
I don't want any of these lame political people who think
jokes,
that they just came up with a good joke, or the people who are like, oh, I'm going to be the first one to make this joke, even though it was made, you know, by 10,000 other people.
Even when that's me.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's
especially
hard because
you.
I feel like some of the people, oh, they are political, but then occasionally they'll have a banger. Once every 6 months.
The thing about it is that, you know, you either die funny or you live long enough to become this.
Right.
You know?
Or louder for people in the back.
Or you carry a sink to your new job to do Carrot Top prop.
Depraved. One thing that,
just putting this right here.
That, you know, Twitter at its best and worst, it's everybody having the one conversation. Elon buying Twitter has made Twitter as bad a place to be as it's ever been. There is way too little outside of that. And it used to be for so many years, like there was just a kind of steady hum of weird Twitter being funny and strange and interesting. And like these little kind of paths you could go down and find these like strange little pockets of really interesting, funny people. And I think all those people lost their minds. And no new people came to replace them.
Some of the best minds of our generation have been lost on Twitter.
Yeah, I'd say
they're just talking about
mostly past generations.
Yeah, there's a certain kind of people that you would have thought as like brilliant minds that were absolutely rotted out by the internet, just completely destroyed by it. So I really wish, if Twitter is going to survive, it's not going to be because Elon is tweeting weird political things or kind of trolling fucking Kathy Griffin.
people, whole conversation about Twitter used to be a conversation about Donald Trump for a while, which is like was not great, but it was at least somewhat understandable because he was president of the United States and held a lot of power. Now the whole thing is a fucking conversation about Elon Musk. It sucks.
It's very boring.
Keep, well, that in mind, I have one of the horny ones.
Good.
So, yes, Twitter Blue, you pay for it. It's $7.99 a month. But if you do, you get to experience the chaotic energy around that one Beto tweet that one time. And you get to, whatever you want, you get to, like, have it sort of a Black Mirror type of situation where, like, at any point in time, you get to feel the chaos we all felt back in 2018, which I do think was a demarcating line in terms of political horniness on Twitter we never recovered from.
Wait, is this the, oh,
I will read the text.
Might not have heard this tweet.
I could
reset it from memory, but you.
I mean, if you want,
if you have
to.
Kids in the car, I know we swear too much. This is your warning to really turn down.
And if you're alone in the car, pull the wheel into oncoming traffic.
I thought you were going to pull over and enjoy yourself.
I thought I thought he was going to go there too.
Yeah. Sorry. I only put the worst part of it in my notes here. Here we go. Thank you. KnowYourMeme.com. Here we go. So this is a tweet. I'm not going to name the person because we've all been here. We've all thought this about something, and we all thought, don't put it on Twitter. Just think it yourself, right? Like, think a weird thought. Instead, this woman said, "No, today is my day." And she's talking about Ojeda. I believe is that how you pronounce the candidate? Ojeda and Avenatti as candidates are like the guy who thinks good sex is pumping away while you're making a grocery list in your head, wondering when he'll be done. O'Rourke was like the guy who's all sweet and nerdy, but holds you down and makes you come until your calves cramp.
Oh, my God.
That, I remember that. I was like, we have passed the Rubicon. This is like a, and I think that's where, I mean, you know, maybe it's my algorithm, but I feel like this weekend was just like, oh, it is no holds bar. Everyone is saying whatever they want, both politically and personally.
So we're paying $7.99 a month for that.
To feel
vibe.
That feeling.
For your calves to cramp.
Wait, I think you have to pay more for that. Actual experience. I'm saying that every month you pay, and that tweet or whatever, it could be a tweet of similar insanity, is wiped from your head, Black Mirror style, and once a month you get to experience it all over again. And it's new to you.
Yeah, I'll do it. Sure.
Yeah, sure.
That's a good laugh. $95 a year for a good laugh.
That's more valuable than a check mark for sure.
We just have a couple more here. We actually have dozens, so I'm trying to figure out which ones are most applicable. But every time, Twitter Blue is $7.99 a month. But every time you retweet a politician, you are texted or emailed one last time from their campaign, where they're begging and screaming at you to give them $3.
I don't want one less time. I would pay for it if I could just shut that off.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unsubscribe. Then I'd pay.
RT for unsubscribe.
Yeah.
Done. Sold.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
For sure.
We have two left here. I'm going to go. Twitter Blue is $7.99 per month, but all internet slang before 2020 is automatically muted. You never have to see Doggo again. And I will also say,
can we do 2021? Can we get? Let's go. Let's.
I'm adding it to the algorithms. Great. 2021.
There's some bad ones in there.
Yeah.
Because I feel like when we came up on the internet, that was just, there was so much of that, and I still occasionally see it. It's like, we're not doing that. Just call it a dog.
Says,
we're
I love someone that. Says I'll kiddos pay for that. Or doggos.
Yeah.
I'm out.
I also don't want to ever see the word Dobby. I understand people loved Harry Potter. If I see that little gross man's name or whatever it is, goblin or something.
Yeah. What are the other ones?
Yeah, a word that you're like, never make me see this again.
Just the phrases are so bad. This you?
This you. Ladder for the people in the back. All the cliches.
Yeah.
I don't know who needs to hear this, but...
I don't know who needs to hear this is the word.
Sure you do. You just tweeted it. You know exactly who needs to hear it.
It's actually nobody seeing this.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah, I'd love to eradicate all of that language.
Yep, I'm in.
Great. Okay.
Normalize and then... X.
Yeah.
A lot of normalizing.
Yeah. And finally, you do get the URL for Elon's secret alt account, and he does post frequent nudes for $7.99. However, it's actually very humanizing and makes you like him more, which you feel more complicated about.
No.
I'm paying $8 a month for Elon nudes, and I have to like him more at the end?
You don't have to. It's just a sort of a natural process. You see him, see a part of himself you didn't expect to ever see. You're like, I guess you are a person, and you have whatever weird thing you have, but don't we all?
But don't we all?
Don't we all?
That's the only one I would pay for.
I'd like to pay $7.99 a month to not be reminded that every person on the other end of a Twitter account is a person.
Wow.
I'd like to continue to
see
them as...
Sort of the experience we have now.
Right.
That's true, value. Yeah. We get to experience that for free.
Sometimes it's not, I guess. It's sort of bots.
Yeah.
Do it carrying Elon's water now. Try to get out of this whole transaction.
I knew I'd bring you back around to it.
Do we have one more?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, let's see.
Let's do one more.
The Krasensteins come back.
Oh, yeah. Get them back.
I'm paying for that. I'm paying to get the Krasenstein's back.
You're paying, and that money's going right in their pocket.
Think
how
of the joy that will bring to so many people.
You know, they've been a little bit.
How many texts will send about the Krasenstein tweets?
They've been a little bit usurped by the Occupy Democrats people that are like, Don Jr. is a piece of shit with a bad haircut, and he just insulted Josh Shapiro. Retweet if you think Don Jr. is a piece of shit. That's better than what they do. That was good.
And then just in general, I just wanted to ask, it's sort of like, is Twitter important? Like, is what is happening to it important? Because I feel like it's like, as people who are on it, it's like, oh no. But if you're not on it, it's sort of like you said, like going in, like in person to canvas and like do things is much more important. And then we sort of have this myopic platform that's being destabilized. Like, what is sort of the, how do we look at it sort of like from 60,000 feet? Do you guys have any feelings about that?
I would say that it has outsized influence because every journalist in the world is on it. And so much of the media coverage that people base their information off of and make decisions off of is shaped by Twitter. So unfortunately, it has an outsized impact, even though it does not have as many people as most other social media platforms. So, and I think it's useful to have some kind of a national conversation going. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it has become shitty over the last several years, and Elon is driving it into the ground as fast as he can.
Yeah, I would say... Twitter is important insofar as a group of people who help shape the national conversation view it as a place where people come to shape the national conversation. But there will be a hinge point, and it could be, we don't know when it will be, it could be soon based on how quickly Elon is sort of eviscerating the place, that all of a sudden, if it's just journalists who don't feel like they're getting a sense of what the lefty pundits are saying and what the right pundits are saying, if it doesn't feel like that kind of like bleeding edge of a national political conversation where people come to kind of hear from, like, you know, the 1,000 people who shape the political debate. If that doesn't feel like what it is, I think all of a sudden it'll stop being useful, and then it won't be important to be there, and then everyone will have to go somewhere else. Because we do want that space.
Yeah.
Like, that space is valuable. It just doesn't have to be Twitter.
Yeah. It was never as important as some people thought it was, especially the Twitter founders who thought they were responsible for the Arab Spring and stuff. Like, eyes rolled so far back into my head that I nearly died. I think its importance was waning long before Elon Musk came around, because there's other platforms where you can reach way more people instead of talking to a chat room full of losers. But again, if you brought back Brian Krasenstein, you could get content like, while many of you are likely yelling go Patriots or go Rams, I'm yelling go Robert Mueller and the rule of law.
That's a good
one. That is gold.
I paid to experience that tweet.
I guess I'll see y'all on TikTok.
See you on TikTok.
See you there.
Thank you for playing.
Great game.
Hella Kiefer, thanks for joining PodSave America.
Me.
Thanks to everyone we talked to in Nevada who's out there knocking on doors. Be one of those people in these final hours before the election. And we'll talk to you on the other side. Bye, everyone. PodSave America is a Crooked Media production. The executive producer is Michael Martinez. Our senior producer is Andy Gardner-Bernstein. Our producers are Haley Muse and Olivia Martinez. It's mixed and edited by Andrew Chadwick. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis sound engineered the show. Thanks to Hallie Kiefer, Ari Schwartz, Sandy Gerard, Andy Taft, and Justine Howe for production support. And to our digital team, Elijah Cohn, Phoebe Bradford, Milo Kim, and Amelia Montu. Our episodes are uploaded as videos at youtube.com/PodSaveAmerica.
The country feels like it's falling apart right before our eyes, and the people inside it are being silenced.
So we're going to East 26th Street and Nicolette Avenue, which is where Alex Preti was executed by ICE and Border Patrol.
That is not a headline. That is a human life. And it is all happening right now.
Do you worry about your own safety being involved in all this?
Yes, but it doesn't really feel like there's another option, you know?
And of course, they use a 5-year-old child as bait. And of course, they're doing all these horrible, bad things because they don't know what they're doing. They've been told that they're going to get rid of the worst, then they have absolute immunity. And they've been told that nothing they do will they ever be held accountable for.
On my show, Runaway Country, we go where the headlines hit home, from communities under threat to the people fighting to be heard. New episodes of Runaway Country drop every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or watch on YouTube.